Greetings, friends. I'm John Haspel. This is a recording of our Tuesday evening Dhamma class from Cross River Meditation Center in Frenchtown, New Jersey, on April 21st, 2020. This is the 11th week of our 12-week Truth of Happiness Dhamma study, and this week's talk is on the precepts and paramitas. If you find benefit from this talk, please consider a donation at becoming-buddha.com. Thank you. Peace. So tonight we're on the second half of week 11. Last week we looked at, or last Tuesday, wait a minute, last Saturday we looked at the precepts, and the second half of this is on the paramitas. And so these last four chapters or 4 weeks of the Truth of Happiness study, describe the actual practical experience of Dhamma practice that we learned and established in the first 8 weeks. It's simply the Buddha's teachings on what authentic Dhamma practice looks like. And we began this four-week section on looking at karma and rebirth, bringing to mind that the Dhamma is all about what's occurring and what we're giving birth to in this moment. And so then as we looked at the hindrances, the precepts, and now the paramitas, you can see that these are descriptions of heightened qualities of mind that are developed through the Dhamma, not to aspire to. And there's a subtle but significant difference. Much of modern Buddhism is based on, and really you could say New Age spirituality is based on concepts of what a so-called awakened or enlightened human being would look like. All well and good, but the path to getting there is often, it's either left out or it's such a confusing path that it's impossible. It's not based on Four Noble Truths. It's not based on reality. So these are, again, these are not mind states that we should grasp after. They're mind states that we should acknowledge. It's much like acknowledging the different levels of meditative absorption, of jhana. Again, we as I taught that, as a Buddha taught, those deepening levels of jhana are not to be grasped after, or you'll never get there. And the same is true for these paramitas and even the precepts. They're a description of an awakened mind. So if anybody's reading along, I'm about halfway through, but I don't have page numbers here. I don't think anybody's reading along with me. The word paramitas means great perfections, and so it's referring to great perfections of mind. These are qualities of mind that at first generate through Dhamma practice, and then we are to be mindful of them as a way of remaining focused on the Dhamma. In other words, it's just a check on authentic Dhamma practice and refined mindfulness. Incorporating through right intention to hold these perfections of thought, word, and deed develops focus and patience, but I should put in here, only when we're gentle with ourselves. If we find that we're not living within these great perfections and we beat ourselves up, again, we're never going to get there. But that's a sure sign that we've established these perfections as something we hope to acquire, not something we hope to simply notice as a development of our Dhamma practice. Again, a very significant difference. There's, I don't know if I heard this first in the 12-step rooms or maybe earlier, but no, you've all heard the phrase, it's okay to act as if until you get there. It wasn't the 12-step rooms. And it was kind of inferred that if you weren't real happy about having to stay sober or being sober or whatever else was going on, to just act as if, and eventually it'll happen. And that's probably one of the reasons why there's a 3% recovery rate in 12-step rooms. We can't act as if. We're just trying to fool ourselves. And one of the big frustrations I had in my first 400 years of Buddhist practice was I felt like I was always acting as if I was hoping to be the person that I was seeing exemplified all around me, not realizing that nobody else knew what they were doing either. And it's a very stressful place to be, to decide that, okay, I want to be a loving, compassionate, patient human being. That will prove something to me and to the world. So let me just do that. And then you can't do it. Because even though you have the thought that you want to act in a certain way, you have the same quality of mind that preceded that thought. And so unless you have something within you, this is what the Buddha awakened to, unless you have something within you to actually change that way of looking at yourself in relation to the world and in relation to I am the most loving, compassionate human being there ever was, you can't do it until you actually start looking at what is my actual view here? What is my intention in this moment? Is it my intention to awaken, or is it my intention to appear awakened? And most, we got to watch those big statements like that because they always get me in trouble. Many people lose focus on grasping after the appearance of what they're trying to gain rather than have the actual experience. Ehepasiko, come and see for yourself. I'm going to expand on that in our next study too, that whole idea of ehepasiko, that it's not just the Buddha offering us a gentle invitation to come and hang out with him. It's one of his most important charges, that if you want to develop his Dhamma, you have to actually come and see for yourself. You can't take it from him saying, be a good person, or any other teacher, act this way, be a green person, and all that's going to make you a good Buddhist. It doesn't. A good Buddhist is someone who understands Four Noble Truths. Let me continue. The paramitas also provide a framework for viewing progress along the way. I kind of said that. As we start noticing these greater perfections of mind that we're able to develop and maintain, even if it's just briefly, not long enough to be noticed, we know that our Dhamma practice is bearing fruit, and that's important. You hear me talk about this often. It's as important to Dhamma practice to recognize the changes that you make as it is to recognize the changes that you have to make. In other words, that it keeps you going in the right way, in the right direction, in moving through the Dhamma to continually acknowledge, yes, it's bearing fruit. Yes, here's a situation where I might have been manipulative in the past. We had a really great discussion on whatever day, I don't remember the days anymore, on Saturday, about the idea of the precepts, not taking what is not freely given, is obviously you don't steal a pack of gum or somebody's car. That's an important part of it. But even on a more subtle level, we stop taking what other people aren't ready to give us. Meaning we stop taking people as emotional hostages. And we had a great discussion about that. But that also can be seen through these paramitas, through these great perfections. Because if we find ourselves, most of us will not ever be able to recognize that we're manipulating other people. And I'm not talking about gross manipulations. I mean, using fear or power in a relationship, but on a very subtle way. We don't realize we're doing this until we have developed a measure of concentration and calm to actually see it, because it's so subtle. But then we start realizing the tension we create for ourselves by thinking that we have to manipulate another person through this emotionally taking something that's not freely given. And the concomitant result of understanding that is we have wonderful relationships with people. Why? Because we're simply not expecting anything or taking anything from them. It's another way of describing gaining the ability to be mindfully present with ourselves and our lives and the people around us in our lives as our life occurs. So it's simply another way of saying we're not putting conditions on anybody or anything. Sariputta, one of the Buddha's chief disciples, questioned the Buddha one day, how many qualities are there to be developed in the Dhamma? The Buddha responded, well, there are 10 qualities developed in the Dhamma. What are the 10? Giving, virtue, renunciation, which renunciation on a surface level means not clinging to physical objects or wealth or power, that kind of thing. But again, on a very, very, very subtle level, renunciation is referring to the courage and the internal poise to actually renounce your own wrong views of self, to renounce ignorance. That's what we're really giving up, because that's what we're clinging to the most, is these fabricated views of self in relation to the world. So that's what renunciation is all about. Continuing after renunciation is wisdom, energy, patience, truthfulness, and determination, loving kindness, and equanimity. They are all qualities to be developed in the Dhamma. But if you look at every one of them, the Buddha's not teaching that if you want to be a good Dhamma practitioner, you have to be giving, you have to be generous. He's teaching this as a consequence of developing the Dhamma. My words, Giving or dana is the first perfection and incorporates all of the other perfections. In fact, there is an aspect of each paramita in all the other paramitas, and I probably won't get too deep into that. But the essence of an awakened human being is you're not clinging anymore. The way that manifests outwardly is you are a naturally generous person. And you're generous with great wisdom. In other words, you don't hurt yourself by your own generosity, and you don't insist on giving something. It's the same thing about emotional, not taking what is not freely given. You don't insist on giving someone something that they're not ready to accept or that they simply don't want. We live very, that's the essence of being disentangled in the world while still being mindfully and very effectively engaged in the world. These parameters are all our qualities we all possess and are developed further as the behaviors rooted in greed, aversion, and delusion are put aside. The 10 paramitas can be integrated into Dhamma practice by bringing each paramita to mind directly after jhana meditation and generating the intention to remain mindful of each paramita. And that's a simple thing to do, to just spend a moment or two after your meditation practice, or it could be just before, to just bring these to mind and use them as a benchmark for your behavior. Again, not to overanalyze yourself and not to beat yourself up. Just to hold them in mind. This is where I'm going as I develop my Dhamma practice. These 10 perfections of behavior are all aspects of the Eightfold Path, and when developed, free the mind from greed, aversion, and further deluded thinking. When fully developed, the mind remains at peace and unmoved from impermanence of phenomenal life. That's the essence of equanimity. No matter what occurs, my mind is at peace. And you could say that my mind is at peace because I have mastered to the most profound level the first paramita of dana, or generosity, giving freely of myself. And we can only do that, again, ultimately, at its highest and most practical level, when I've let go of all clinging. And we know ultimately that is clinging to fabricated views. It's not clinging to a few pennies here or whatever it might be. Although that's part of it. Lost my spot for a second. Our present moment intentional acts determine the unfolding of our past intentional acts. This is a description of karma. Being mindful of these 10 paramitas will support the development of lasting peace and happiness. So that's the section on the paramitas. I'm going to stop there. The rest of this chapter is the Ratana Sutta, and we did that about 3 or 4 weeks ago. So I am going to stop there. And again, just to reiterate the point that these paramitas are to be noticed as a natural expression, a natural manifestation of our Dhamma practice. That's the talk for tonight. Excuse me for a moment. So let's start with Jane. Jane, how are you? And I'm going to ask you all to unmute your mic. How are you, Jane?
I'm well, thank you.
Good to see you.
This is something new. I haven't done this before, bringing those to mind. So that's something I'm going to try.
Yeah. And again, in a very gentle way, but I think you'll find it enlightening to realize how strongly you hold these qualities and that they've developed. Thank you for joining tonight. Ram, how are you? Ram, I'll let you unmute your mic. There you are.
I just did. I'm still working on this one thing you just threw out, that giving is the overarching paramita, because of not clinging, because it's a sign of not clinging.
And look at it this way, Rama. I don't mean to interrupt you, but it's the gross expression of giving or dana is, here's $5, go get a sandwich. And that's wonderful to do that. But when you think about the example of the Buddha and how that relates to dana, he was always present with people, always. Meaning he had the ability to, in the moment, give what another person needed in that moment, meaning understanding. And so that's the highest expression of Dhamma practice, isn't it? And it happens to be the first paramita that's mentioned.
Right. And it also comes in love and kindness. That's definitely...
And it's important. That's all an aspect of the same thing, isn't it? Great to notice that. Thank you. Lorna, how are you tonight?
I'm good, thank you, but I have nothing to add.
What?
Thank you very much.
Glad you joined us. Tim, how are you?
John, everybody, I have nothing to add as well.
Wow. Left you speechless tonight. Thanks, Tim. Tom, how are you?
I'm good, thank you. Yeah. Quite challenging talk as usual. A couple of things I just liked, I guess, that were good reminders. What you were saying about how the good sort of actions, so to speak, are consequences of living the Dharma.
Yeah.
As opposed to like that sense that you have to, you know, you must do this or you must do that. But no, you just live the Dharma, and then these things that sort of arise in your life, or the things that you, the ways in which you act, are more consequential of living the Dharma. I found that quite interesting, and again, quite different to the whole kind of like, the whole sort of Ten Commandments thing that I grew up with, right? So I enjoyed that teaching. And then I think the other one was, the clinging to fabricated views is as the sort of the ultimate expression of, renunciation.
Yep.
Is quite, because I try to sort of think of how do these teachings apply to what's most relevant in my life at that time. And, the one I thought of, so you've obviously probably noticed I don't have any hair this week. So I couldn't get to the hair.
I don't either.
Yeah, exactly. I'm going for your look, John. Your style is very influential.
By the way, everybody that joins our retreat has to have a shaved head, just so you know.
Oh, there you go. Okay. but it was funny because I guess there are some sort of reasons why a lot of Buddhists or monks have a shaved head, right? And I guess it's maybe you want to correct me or expand upon it, but I guess it's a part of sort of renunciation, right? If I'm being absolutely honest, I kind of shaved it off, and I'm like, because I haven't normally had this look, right? And I'm like, and I'm not really that. It's not been so far, if I'm being absolutely honest, a great, I don't feel like I've been able to sort of, it's an interesting experience for me, because I'm kind of looking at myself in the mirror and being like, oh, I don't think it looks so good, or when's it going to grow back, and at what point is it going to start looking good again? So it's coming back to what you were saying about appearing awakened, or actually being awakened. And yeah, it's easy to do something that externally might look like you're more quote unquote awakened, and yet it's all just superficial. It doesn't really mean anything. I mean, it's all, you just have to investigate your own mind and say, okay, what is my direct experience of not having any hair, and is it in any way an expression of my renunciation, or is it something that I've done because I think it might look good, or because it might make me more I'm doing something that other monks would do, and I don't know, it's quite a and I think if I apply that this clinging to right or fabricated views. If you can apply it in every single, I mean, I've given that example just because it's the most current one right now, but for every single part of your life, it's incredibly challenging. But it's revealing as well, I think. Definitely challenging.
Yeah, thank you, Tom. I mean, that just that what you talked about shaving a head is very revealing. If the intention for me to shave my head is because it proves that I'm a good Buddhist, I blew it. You know, it's not the only time I think it's Dhammapada 22, which we're going to get to in a little while, where the Buddha said it's not by shaven heads or matted hair that one gains enlightenment, because he noticed around him that people were just putting on the appearance of Dhamma practice and not. I think the reason why the original Sangha shaved their heads is just for practical reasons. It was just easier to do that, to keep yourself clean and, you know, not have the coronavirus, not have lice in your head that other people are going to get sick. I think it was just a practical way of living in the world. There's some scholars that argue that the Buddha never shaved his head or a beard. You know, that if I ever saw something like that, it'd be very strange, but who knows? I think it's just a practical reason, and it points to everything. Even something as subtle as shaving your head could be continued ignorance or an expression of continued ignorance, or it could simply be a practical reason. You bring up a good point, Tom. I'm glad you joined us too. Hello, Michael. Hello, Julia.
Hi, John. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you for asking. How are you, Michael?
Actually, I'm doing okay. I'm doing good.
Good.
I don't want to get too self-referential about anything, so I'll just go on and read my little paragraph that I want to read here. I just looked at the last, page 308 in the book, and it just mentions, I just found something interesting in here, and I'll read the paragraph quickly. These 10 perfections of behavior are all aspects of the Eightfold Path, and when developed, free the mind from greed, aversion, and further deluded thinking. When fully developed, the mind remains at peace and unmoved from impermanence of phenomenal life. So the mind will become still. Stillness is where the mind is to be. That's what I'm getting from this whole perfection of Dhamma. Also, through impermanence, I think the Buddha and the way he imparts or enables us to understand impermanence is through the aggregates and also through the hindrances. Okay, and it's just there from that understanding of impermanence. You had mentioned for us to be, we have to be gentle with ourselves, okay? And I had mentioned this one time before. When we understand who we once were before we kind of, I'm not gonna say awakened, but became aware of what we're learning here, we can understand what disenchantment means with the human form and the mind. From wrong view, and we can see who we used to be, and I think we all are evolving as a sangha, individually and as a sangha, and once we've reached this point where we can recognize who we used to be, we can also understand the struggles that an individual that we used to be trying to make in an ego self in an impermanent world, how futile that is. So to me, that's where we have compassion and gentleness with ourself originates. And I think the Buddha made that very clear in us being able, for it being that important for us to see who we used to be, envision who we used to be, and banging our head against the wall of impermanence and forever striving to be something that is unsustainable. So that's an important lesson to learn. It works for me. It jumped off the page, to me. And I just love the way the Buddha, you know, explains things in a manner that causes the mind to generate and to discern the true meaning of what he's trying to say.
Yeah, it is. Thank you, Michael. The teachings are just brilliant that way. You know, must have been with Matt. I had a session with Matt this afternoon. It was really wonderful. And we're just talking about that. And we talked about it a little bit earlier, too, before we started with Ram. The Buddha had a great economy of words. That's what we were talking about with Ram earlier, about all the repetition in the Pali, in the Sutta Pitaka. But it's not likely that the Buddha actually spoke with that much repetition because of this. He simply knew how to live in the world as a human being. And he was the most effective human beings at being a human being, and he taught us all how to do it. And that's really the essence of the Buddha's Dhamma. And so the essence of an awakened human being holds these perfections, just as you described. Thank you, Michael. Hello, Julia.
Hello, John. Thank you very much for the teaching and for this beautiful lesson in this book. I have nothing to add for tonight, though. So thank you, John.
Thank you for joining us. Kevin, how are you?
Good, John. Thank you. Nice to see everybody and nice to sit with everybody. I'm going to take noble silence. Thank you.
Glad you joined us. Hello, Helen. Hello, Russ.
Hello, everybody. I liked what Tom said about sort of like when you think about your motivation for things, even if you're doing something good or kind or something that might seem innocent, like shaving your head, is there another motivation behind it that is maybe you're not initially aware of, which in the end is going to affect how your giving is received or how your act is received. I read something in a book one time about how if you are offering loving gestures to someone, but that's not what a loving gesture to them means, then it's not a complete giving.
Yeah.
Because you're not really in tune with what the receiver needs.
That's right.
So it's sort of like, you know, thinking about, is there a motivation behind your giving? And if so, how does that take away from the value or the purity of the gift?
Yeah.
And so when you get to the point where you have no personal motivation, then it's freely given.
Yeah. And again, that's guided by the Eightfold Path, isn't it? Right intention.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yep.
In this moment, I'm holding the intention to not be craving after or clinging to anything. And so you're able to be truly generous.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Helen. Just to clear things up with why I shave my head. Because many people would think that I shave it because I'm a Buddhist. And I shaved my head long before that. And I did it for the most practical reason. I'm incredibly cheap. And I got tired of paying $21 for a crew cut, so I figured, let me do it myself, and I just shaved it all. Really, that's the truth. And I haven't looked back. It's as easy to do this than to go get a crew cut. So,
John, can I share a funny story?
Please. Your stories are always great, too. So, yes.
So recently, I got to see the ultrasound for my son Nathan and his wife Carrie's baby at 20 weeks.
Wow.
And it was a perfect profile. And Carrie's father said the funniest thing. He said, looks like he's already using Nathan's barber. Because it's perfectly bald head. Because my son shaves his head too.
the unborn is mimicking him already. So.
Yes.
I think we should really think about, maybe it's something to do during this shutdown. We should all shave our heads before the next meeting. What do you think?
Maybe we should not.
Russ, what do you think?
I'm going for a ponytail.
I had one of those too.
Yeah, I had one of those too. It's coming back.
Yep.
I thought the reading tonight was interesting in light of where we are right now with the coronavirus, yeah. Because, you know, part of us wants to care about others, not just loved ones, but in general society, the public. You hear all these stories, but part of us is looking out for ourselves. Mm. And that's that push and pull of what about me? But you want to care about others. So I think these teachings, if you just get to the core of it and you understand that if you just are these things, then it all takes care of itself. You don't have to worry about whether you're in for it for yourself or you're trying to pretend you're, you know, helping somebody. It just kind of goes away. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah. Thank you, Russ. I know you've all heard me say so often the great power in the Eightfold Path, having integrated into our lives, into my life, is I know I'm good to go. I know that now, that acting within that framework of the Eightfold Path, I cannot do harm to others or to myself. And that brings so much freedom to the present moment. I don't always have to be looking out for myself. And what am I going to do next? I mean, there were things I did in my life that I couldn't believe I did them, but it was because I had lost my, I'm not talking about hurting people, but just hurting people directly, but I had lost my mind and now I don't. And it develops an inner knowing. The Buddha calls it, when we talked about the classes we did on jhana meditation, this inner poise that's developed. And it's through that Eightfold Path that I now have assurances based on my own experience, ehepasiko, that I'm not going to hurt people anymore. We talked about it 6 weeks ago, I think, about that. That one of the underlying stressors in life, conditioned stressors, is that once we've done something in the world that caused us to harm another person inadvertently, it still conditions our minds towards aversion, towards doing it again. And there's always this underlying tension that am I doing something now that's going to hurt another person? And that's why we get so reactive too to something like that. As we develop the Dhamma and clear that type of thinking out of our conditioned way of living in the world, our minds are simply at peace because we know we're not going to do that. We know that we're going to live within the framework that this awakened human being gave us, and we're good to go. Josh, how are you? Good to see you tonight.
Hi, John.
No problems getting on tonight?
Pardon me?
No problems connecting or anything like that?
Well, greetings from Colorado, and I read your book and got on your website and joined one class, and you recommended I experiment with Zoom, and that's what I'm doing tonight. And I just have so far really enjoyed hearing from everybody else and kind of jumping in the middle of everything, but I like what I hear and look forward to spending more time.
Welcome to our Sangha. And it really is a warm and welcoming Sangha, isn't it?
Yes.
Well-founded on the Dhamma. I think I mentioned to you that this is the tail end of this study, but all the talks are on the website if you want to review them.
Okay.
Yeah, on the homepage, just look for the link that said 2020 Truth of Happiness Dhamma Study, and all the talks are there, so you can catch up as we go along. But welcome, Josh. Good to see you. Trevor, how are you?
Hi, John. Good to see you. Good to see everyone. And thanks for the teaching tonight and for the study overall. I don't have too much to add. I would just say, as I read the chapter, I felt really challenged to think about my reactions in the heat of the moment when things are really challenging and there's almost a knee-jerk automatic reaction of stress or anxiety or anger. And so this week I've just been trying to think about those habitual patterns and actually the word Michael used of stillness is what's been on my mind this week, just trying to slow down rather than have a rushed. Sometimes I have this view of myself as just having a lot lot to juggle and kind of rushing around and just trying to make a decision and intention to slow down, even physically, and give myself a moment when I'm having a knee-jerk nervous system kind of reaction to just let it flow through me and catch my mind and see if I can get into right view and hopefully some of these paramitas. But yeah, it's a real challenge and something I'm excited to keep working on and learning from others in our Sangha, how they're working with that.
Yeah. Thank you, Trevor. You see this, we all see it just as they are. They are examples of a developing Dhamma practice. They're outstanding guidance for that, very gentle guidance. Just be mindful of it. Good to see you, Trevor. How are you, Brett?
Good. Thank you for the teaching. And like what a lot of people have to say, and giving freely, and I guess not clinging, craving to a result of that was something that I heard, and it's definitely a much better feeling when you can give freely and you're not looking for something in return. And it was good to see that. So sometimes motives can be like, you have to check your motives, and I think that definitely has gotten me in trouble before. So it's to be able to make that decision at the time and to take a look at that when you're about to embark in that kind of journey. So thanks for the teaching, and thanks for what everybody shared tonight.
Thank you, Brett. Thanks for joining us and being a part of our Sangha. So there's one more. Where are we here? Next Tuesday will be our last. No, there's one more week after this of our Truth of Happiness study. We'll conclude with the 2 weeks on the Anatta Lakkhana Sutta. And then I think that takes us right up to our online retreat that I hope all of you are going to join us. Please reserve your space. So just got to keep it probably to 20 or 24 folks, just so I know. And then we're going to begin I think it's a 26 week. It's hard to remember. The supplemental suttas that were in the emails for each week of our Truth of Happiness Dhamma study, almost every one of them had a supplemental sutta that I know some of you looked at. I don't know if all of you did. And I realized about halfway through our study that the supplemental suttas were themselves an outstanding study, most of them on suttas that people never even heard of. So I decided to build a study out of that. And as I started putting it together, I think it's going to prove to be a remarkable study for all of us. Most of it is on the website. But again, we're going to start that on May the 5th, much like this Dhamma study. And that'll be a book too. I'm getting some help from our teachers in proofreading. So I'm hoping to have 3 books that I've been working on for many years out this year. So that'll be exciting for me, and I hope all of you. I think that's it. There was another announcement I had, but I can't think of what it is. If it's important, I'll put it in an email. Does anybody have any questions or comments on tonight's class? I got to say, I appreciate all of you just staying on topic and being concise in your questions or comments. These online meetings are flowing just as smoothly as as they do in Frenchtown. So to all of you, I appreciate that. And I think we all do. All right, we'll finish as we always do with metta. And after this, I'll stop the recording, but we can hang out for a little bit in our virtual room here if you want. So again, close your eyes and close your mouths and just take a breath. Become mindful of your in-breath and your out-breath. And these are the Buddha's words on metta from the Karaniya Metta Sutta. This is what should be done by one who is skilled in goodness and who knows the path of peace. Let them be able and upright, straightforward and gentle in speech, humble and not conceited, contented and easily satisfied. Unburdened with duties and frugal in their ways, peaceful and calm and wise and skillful, not proud or demanding in nature. Let them not do the slightest thing that the wise would later reprove. Wishing, in gladness and in safety, may all beings be at ease. Whatever living beings there may be, whether they are weak or strong, omitting none, the great or the mighty, medium, short, or small, the seen and the unseen, those living near and far away, those born and to be born, may all beings be at ease. Let none deceive another or despise any being in any state. Let none through anger or ill will wish harm upon another. Even as a mother protects with her life her child, her only child, so with a boundless heart should one cherish all living beings. Radiating kindness over the entire world, spreading upwards to the skies and downwards to the depths, outwards and unbounded, freed from hatred and ill will. Whether standing or walking, seated or lying down, free from drowsiness, one should sustain this recollection. This is said to be the sublime abiding. By not holding to fixed views, the pure-hearted one, having clarity of vision, being freed from all sense desires, is not born again into this world. Thank you all for a wonderful class tonight. Peace.
Thank you for listening. I rely on donations to support the continued restoration, preservation, and presentation of the Buddha's Dhamma. If you find benefit here, please consider a donation at becoming-buddha.com. Thank you. Peace.